Welcome back to Issues Etc. For the next 25 minutes, we continue our conversation with Leslie Montgomery on the faith of Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. Leslie Montgomery has interviewed hundreds of Christian leaders and authored several books, including her latest called The Faith of Condoleezza Rice. Our call-in number is 505-7850, also 1-800-730-2727, or you can email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org, and we're giving this book away to listeners with the best questions or comments. Let's go to the phones and talk with Floy, who is listening in her car. Hi, Floy.
Yes, I heard Dr. Rice speak in the first Bush campaign at St. Louis University. She's a brilliant woman. I would vote for her in a heartbeat for president. I want to know how she deals with criticism from the black community. Thank you.
Thank you, Floy. Leslie.
Boy, that's a great question. You know, she has gotten a lot of flack. You know, she's been called a race traitor on several occasions. But, you know, she really has kept pretty mum about her comments, saying that, you know, she's in her position right now to make decisions and to talk about those decisions according to the, President Bush, because she's really his representative, you know, the face of the White House. And she says that she'll address many issues when she steps down after 2008 elections.
Where does she stand on issues like abortion and gay rights?
You know, once again, she says she will not, you know, comment on those, but she has said that she's mildly pro-choice. And when I pushed that with the people I interviewed for her book, and they told me that, you know, that she believes that if a woman is raped or a child had incest, and she believes that there should be a right for parents to do something, or for people to do something with that child, and also believes in parental notification. I also know that she has not made any public comment on homosexuality, but she did say in this book, in the very last chapter, she said, you know, I worry about legalizing morality, and I worry about Christians, and she's talking about herself, about us being so judgmental towards people who have had abortions and who are homosexual that we lose the opportunity to witness to them. And she said, you know, Jesus never was yelling and screaming and pointing a finger at people. He approached people in sin with love. And as I interviewed friends and family members, I found out that there are people in her inner circle who are gay and who have had abortions. And so I think that her caution is, you know, I don't want to lose the opportunity to minister to these people. And when I interviewed some of these people, they said, you know, Condi, even though they themselves were not believers, they said, you know, Condi represents Jesus in the time that I've known her, she represents Jesus in all she says and does. And they described her character as being that we would call of the fruit of the Spirit, you know, patient and loving and kind and gentle. And so, you know, it's hard to say, you know, from bits and pieces that I've heard, you know, to give the full story. But I look forward to asking her those questions once she steps down from the White House.
She has a storied career in education. I mean, this is no small feat to become provost of Stanford,
no,
especially at the age that she did. But what got her from what appeared to be a very rising star career in education into politics?
Well, let me say, you know, when she was provost of Stanford, she was approached by other major colleges to be their president, and she turned them down. You know, she was there being provost, and Brent Scowcroft came to Stanford to teach on arms control. And he was speaking, and she stood up, and she challenged him on something that he had said. You remember that he was an advisor for President Bush Sr., and she challenged him. And he was so in awe with her knowledge of the Soviet Union and of arms control that he made a vow that he would do whatever he could to help her succeed in her career in Soviet studies, in international studies. And so when he went back to D.C., he contacted her and asked her to help be an advisor under him for senior Bush, which she did. And that's sort of how she got started.
So what was her role exactly? What does a national security advisor do in the first Bush's White House?
Well, she was a Soviet expert, and so she advised the president on the Soviets and on military strategy even.
I guess I got to ask this, since we're talking about career, do you think that she does have plans after leaving public life in this capacity to re-enter as a possibility for president sometime in the future?
Absolutely not. You know, Condi has had so many opportunities, and I share those opportunities in the book, to climb the political ladder of success, and she's turned them all down way before she was in the White House. I mean, she was asked on two different occasions to run for governor of California when she was at Stanford. She has been asked to run for Senate. She has turned all those down, and she said, you know, I've seen the presidential campaign up close a couple of times, and I really admire people who can do that. I have absolutely no interest, never had. She said, I've never even been president of my class in school. And she said, I just have no desire for it. Her plans, according to her and her family and friends, is that she's going back to Stanford when she gets, you know, after the election in 2008, and she wants to teach again. And she and her father founded the Center for a New Generation in 1992 before his death. And it's a after-school program for 8-year-old to 18-year-olds. And it specifically helps children prepare for the college track. And she has been supporting that nonprofit organization financially throughout the years. But because of her role in the state, she has not been able to have, you know, actually hands-on. And she wants to go back and do that.
I had heard... I think I even heard her say this in an interview several years back, that her secret wish is to become NFL football commissioner.
And, you know, everybody laughs about that, but it's true. She really does. I mean, she just, you know, she really sees a similarity between warfare, military warfare, and football. You know, she was raised watching football games. She knows everything about football, who the draft choices are, who's playing for what team. And if she was offered that job, I believe strongly that she would take that job, probably as a detour before going back to Stanford. But she has assured the commissioner that she's not going to take his job out from underneath him as of yet.
What kind of reflections did you hear from her and from her friends and associates on September 11th?
You know what? Condi said, you know, I did everything I could do that was my job to do physically. And she said, and then all I could do was pray. She did not sleep well the following weeks afterwards. She said she prayed continually throughout that time. She really leaned on the Lord for guidance for her decisions that she was making. She was really torn up about it, just like, you know, the rest of America was. And it was especially hard for her. She had lost her father 6 months before, so she was still grieving the death of her father. Her mother had already passed away. She was the face of the White House, just kind of, you know, thrown into that position because of 9/11, and there was a lot of pressure on her. And she said, you know, when push came to shove, all I could do was cling to the Lord.
She has a public image, and I think I'm being fair here, at least in assessing how people perceive her.
Mm-hmm.
Very professional. Obviously an overachiever, pretty much all business, mm-hmm. kind of a woman, and able to rise to these kind of challenges. What is true, what is false about her popularly perceived public image?
Well, you know, even her friends say, I know Condi appears aloof and hardened, but that's not really who she is on a one-on-one basis. You know, Condi is all about business. I'm here. This is my role. I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. And chances are she's going to far exceed anybody who's ever done it before. I mean, that's just the way she does things. But personally, her friends and family say that she is a very loving. She's never one to carry her emotions on her sleeve. She did grieve the normal grieving process for the loss of both of her parents. But people close to her who were at the funerals of both her parents said, you know, she is so strong. Like the day her mother died, she was in California. Her dad was in Colorado. And she said she was so devastated, and she couldn't get a flight till the next day. She was not doing well dealing with the loss of her mother. Her mother was her biggest supporter and confidant. She called one of her friends from Stanford and said, will you come over and stay with me tonight? And they did, and she was just really had her crying and upset. And she went to bed, and about 4 hours later, she got up to go catch her flight, and her friend was taking her to the airport. And he said, you know, she looked great. She looked like she'd gotten sleep and she was okay. And he said, are you okay? And she said, you know what? She said, I wasn't okay, but I was praying and I knew that someday I'm going to see my mother again. And so that really was where she put her perspective. And it was said that she didn't cry at either one of her parents' funerals, but afterwards, you know, in the following weeks and months, that she really grappled with the loss of her parents.
It's in a sense, she's kind of or at least this is my interpretation, that she's a bit of a throwback in this age where politicians and public figures are supposed to shed that strategic tear for the camera, that she doesn't do that.
No, she doesn't. And she does, you know, she's had plenty of opportunities to play what we would call the race card or to play the woman card or, you know what I mean? And she has not taken them. And it's really interesting. It's interesting because, you know, blacks often say, well, she needs to, you know, speak out on black rights. And women say she needs to speak up on women rights. But I think that if she did, and if she showed a lot of emotion, you know, the very things that we don't see from her, we would probably be scratching our heads going, who is this woman? You know, and is she really the right person for the position? And she's into this position, and she's saying, you know what, this is my job. I'm here to do my job. I'm not here to give my political views. I'm not here, you know, to do, you know, to fulfill the expectations that all these different people have for me. I'm here to do my job. And she is very much about business. When she was provost at Stanford, she went in and she made a lot of hard decisions. A lot of people weren't happy. But a couple of years later, when they saw the fruit of her decisions, they were like, maybe she did know what she was doing. And so, you know, Condi has a history of stepping up to the plate, doing what needs to be done, even if people don't like her for it. But it seems her record shows that she's made really wise decisions in the past.
Folks, what kind of questions do you have for Leslie Montgomery? She has written this book, her latest, called The Faith of Condoleezza Rice on the Faith of Secretary of State. We're giving away her book to the best callers, or callers with the best questions or comments, 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're listening to Issues Etc. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Let's talk about her position as Secretary of State. How does she differ from the two previous occupants of that office, Colin Powell, and then the first female Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright?
Well, let me tell you, a similarity between she and Madeleine is that Madeleine's father, Joseph Corbell, mentored Condi. He took her under his wing. She was at the University of Denver. She walked in. She says, accidentally into one of his classes and literally fell in love with Russia, everything Russian. And he mentored her as he did Madeleine. And ironically, they both women ended up on the opposite ends of the political scale. And so it's just really interesting. But I think Condi is different in that she has been very forthright with her faith. She's been very forthright with her dependence upon God. She is also showed a stability that while Colin and Madeleine showed that, it's a different type of stability, and I really believe that that's evidence of her heritage of faith and also her personal passion for the Lord and moral convictions that stem from both those things.
What about Colin Powell, who was immediately before her, and he had at least the reputation of not seeing eye to eye with the president, mm-hmm. and Condoleezza Rice was, I guess she was criticized in the press for being a correction to that when she took the office.
Yes, you know, and she does. She adores President Bush. She is probably his biggest supporter. She, you know, I think that it's interesting when the Secretary of State does not agree with the president, only because the Secretary of State's position is to get all the facts and present them to the president. And I don't know that Condi, in the notes that I have read, and I've read a lot of personal notes from the family, I don't know that she is actually the one to say, this is my opinion, to the president. I think what she does is she presents all the facts, unless he personally asks her, what is your opinion on this? She doesn't share that, you know. So she's been a little bit more quiet, per se, than Colin was.
Let's talk with Bernard, who calls from his car. Hi, Bernard.
Yes, thank you very much. I was wondering if the author believed that whether or not the Secretary of State believes that a state or the state is an instrument of God's justice, and if so, can a Muslim state be an instrument of God's justice? And as we've seen in World War II, that a state can be the antithesis of God's justice.
Thank you, Bernard.
No, thanks, Bernard. That's a really good question. I really don't know the answer to that. I've read everything she's ever, you know, all of her speaking engagements. I've never heard her comment on that. The only thing she's ever said is that she does not believe it's right to legalize morality, and we have to be very cautious about mixing the two. Not that she says that we need to, you know, have separation of church and state, but she's not said much more on that.
On the issue of Islam, part of her task as Secretary of State, of course, is to deal with the Islamic world, with Iraq, with leaders there. She has been probably spent more time in the Middle East in the last year than many other Secretary of State since the time of Carter. Does she demonstrate an awareness that as a woman walking into that culture, into that religious milieu, she might be at a disadvantage? What's your read on that?
No, I agree with you. I think she does notice that. But Condi has a way of really charming people. And I think part of that comes from favor from the Lord. But I also think part of that is that she really studies up on where she's going, the culture, the people, what they believe. And she really walks in respect of those things. And so, you know, it doesn't mean she agrees with them and what their, you know, what their beliefs are, but she really is a very knowledgeable and respectful person. She's not going in there like a bulldozer, which I'm sure really helps her.
Dave is calling from his car. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Yeah, I just thought, what if we were to, say, wave the magic wand and for a minute that Connie actually was president? What kind of president would she be? What types of things and what kind of attitude and how would she run things?
Thanks, Dave.
Well, you know, Dave, that's wonderful, you know. I think that probably a lot of people would be shocked. Any position that she's ever had, apart from being a professor at Stanford, which she was just adored by her students, had won several teaching awards from the students. But in the other positions, like at Provost, National Security Advisor, and even in her role as Secretary of State, she has been so direct. For example, at Provost, as Provost at Stanford, they were $40 million in debt, and she came into the position, she said, you know what, we're going to balance this budget within 2 years. People said, that will never happen. She said, oh, yes, it will. And she starts cutting funds. People are freaking out. They're just like, what are you doing? You can't do this. They said, you know, she said, if we can't afford it, we're not going to do it. And within 2 years, she had that budget balanced. And not only was it balanced, but they were in the black, and $14 million in the black. And so I think that she would probably likely have the same approach. She'd come in, she'd do what she needed to do, and there'd be a lot of people who are unhappy. However, like when she was provost at Stanford, 2 years later when the budget was balanced and they were in the black and they were doing well, people kind of scratched their head and said, oh, maybe she was right. Yeah, but, you know, some of her drastic decisions, I think, have a chance of offending people. And so I think that there would be a lot of people probably not happy with her as president initially.
Why isn't she married?
You know, she was engaged when she was 20 to Rick Upchurch, who went on to be a Denver Bronco. And she said it was the wrong man at the wrong time. And she says now, you know, that she hopes that the Lord has somebody for her. She believes that the Lord has somebody for her, but it is likely going to be after she steps down from her position as Secretary of State. She has dated a few times as National Security Advisor and Secretary of State, but it all boils down to, she says, you know, I believe that if the Lord does have someone for me, he's going to be someone I can live with, and I just haven't met that person yet.
It's got to be nearly impossible to date in D.C. when you are Secretary of State.
Well, you know, she's got an entourage of, Secret Service men following her. I imagine that first kiss is going to be awfully awkward.
and in this paparazzi culture, probably captured on camera and viewed on YouTube.
That's right.
Have you heard from Condoleezza Rice on the book?
Yeah, you know, she actually read through the book a couple of times after I wrote it. And, you know, her aide called me and said, well, we've got some changes for you. And I was like, oh, she had left a message on my voicemail. I'm thinking, oh, Lord, you know, what did I say or do? And they were all the changes that she made, there were like a dozen of them, were all, you know what, my family gave you or my friends gave you too much information, and I don't want that shared with the world. Would you mind taking that out? Which was really great to hear as an author, you know, I got too much information. That's great. And so, but it was nothing, you know, she didn't change anything. You know, the last chapter's called Marriage, Babies, and the Presidency, and friends and family got really brutally honest about some things, and she didn't change any of it. So I was really, really pleased.
So how did you get the job of doing this, which is essentially a biography, at least to this point, of the Secretary of State?
I tell people I prayed hard and begged shamelessly, but you know, I always pray about whatever books. This is the ninth book I've written, and I really pray about what the Lord wants me to do next. And you know, initially I talked with two different publishers who said yes and then changed their mind. And I'm thinking, hey, am I hearing the Lord right? And then Crossway stepped up to the plate and said, we'd really like to do this. And it just really fell into place. I interviewed one family member, and God gave me some incredible favor with that person. And they ended up calling all these friends and family members and saying, oh, you know, Leslie is a godly woman, and I love her, and she has a really good purpose here, and would you mind interviewing with her? So it just kind of, I mean, really, the Lord went before me and opened all the doors.
Did you have any direct contact with the Secretary of State?
Only after I wrote the book and the changes were made.
So did you speak with her personally?
No, just when her aide called me.
Is there a theme in the end, with only 30 seconds, is there a theme to this career that's still unfolding?
Absolutely, and that is Jeremiah 29:11, which says, God has a plan for our lives. That plan is good and not for evil, and that plan is to give us a hope and a future, and that is the very thing Condi's parents believed before she was born and instilled in her from day one.
Leslie Montgomery has interviewed hundreds of Christian leaders, authored several books, including this latest, The Faith of Condoleezza Rice. Her website address is lesliemontgomery.com. It's all one word, lesliemontgomery.com. Leslie, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Well, when we come back from this break, little soundbite of the week. We try and do this on Thursdays as often as we can. We've got great soundbites from this week's Issues Etc. audio. We've got one from Rudolph Giuliani. We've got one from our guest yesterday, Dr. R. Scott Clark. We've got one from Wesley Smith. He says he's a Martin Luther King Jr. liberal. I think that's what he called himself. And we got one from that sermon we reviewed this week from Pastor Bill Swerlaw on If Christ Is Not Raised. We are going to be playing those four soundbites for you in order, and then we're going to ask you to call and tell us which is your Issues Etc. soundbite of the week and why. By the way, Floyd called us a little earlier. If you give us a call back and give us your information, Floyd, we're going to send you a copy of this book, The Faith of Condoleezza Rice. Thanks for being part of the program. Our call-in numbers, as we go into this last half hour and get ready to play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727, or 505-7850. We'll be right back.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Is marriage a human institution, or is marriage a divine institution? Is marriage a gift from God or an invention of man? Is there a difference between a Christian marriage and the marriage of unbelievers? Our Issues Etc. book of the month for April is by Dr. Richard Iyer. It's called Marriage is Like Dancing. It explores Holy Scripture on the subject of God's gift of marriage. Marriage is Like Dancing is $14.99 plus shipping and handling. For more information, call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or you can browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. It's the Issues Etc. book of the month for April. Marriage is Like Dancing. The phone number again, 1-800-325-3040, or our website, issuesetc.org.
The creation, it's falling apart.
Answers with Ken Ham. president of the Bible Upholding Ministry of Answers in Genesis. Well, Ken, I think that most people would agree with you. The world certainly is falling apart. But then they might ask the question, where's the Creator in all of this?
Well, many people do ask me, if God's an all-powerful Creator, how could He let His creation fall apart like this? Of course, they're implying that God somehow has lost control of the earth. But the Bible tells us exactly what God the Creator is doing. He's removed some of His sustaining power, but just temporarily. You see, when God judged Adam's sin in Genesis, He also made the earth begin to decay. Romans 8:22 tells us that the whole of creation's groaning and travailing in pain. For thousands of years now, everything's been running down because of sin. God's given us a taste of life without Him, a world full of violence, death, suffering, and disease. But the Creator's hand is still obvious. The book of Romans tells us that it's obvious that there's a God. It's clearly seen from the creation. Now, if God withdrew all of His sustaining power, the creation would cease to exist. Instead, the Creator's allowing things to fall apart. However, one day God will restore the heavens and the earth to what it was like before sin.
Have you been wondering whether or not the book of Genesis can be trusted? Did Noah really build an ark? What about a global flood? Well, answers to your questions can be found on our website, answersradio.com.
I am Professor Rick Neufer, and I am the Dean of Assessment at Concordia Theological Seminary. Our seminary strives to be the very best seminary possible for the preparation of pastors and other church workers. Therefore, we have voluntarily subjected ourselves to the high standards of the North Central Association of Colleges and Universities and to the standards of the Association of Theological Schools. The faculty and administration of Concordia Theological Seminary continually assess its programs, curriculum, and teaching methods, all so that we can be the best that we can be and offer our students an excellent education. We take St. Paul's word to Timothy seriously, that pastors should be apt to teach. They must know the faith and be able to articulate it.
For excellence in theological education, call Concordia Theological Seminary, 1-800-481-2155.
AM 850 KFUO is grateful for those of you who support our radio ministry. Today, we say thank you to John and Christine Thompson of DePere, Kevin Kinsey of Bridgeton, and Lorraine Wallace of St. Charles. Your support helps make the programming on AM 850 KFUO possible.
Welcome back for the last half hour of Issues Etc. It's time to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. It's very simple. What we do is we go through the audio from this week's Issues Etc. And as we're doing the program, we're kind of making mental notes, noticing a few things. And once in a while, across this not crowded room, my eyes and Jeff's eyes will meet. Not in romance, believe me. That's not it. It's a moment of realization, of an epiphany that we have just heard an Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, or at least a contender for the Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We've got four this week from a variety of subjects and a variety of different guests and those who are featured here on the program. We're going to play them for you, and we want to hear from you. Which is your Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, and why? Now, it's important that you understand, we're not asking you, which one do you agree with the most? In fact, there's one here that I imagine many of our listeners, will completely disagree with. It is not whether or not you agree. It's whether or not you think it is a soundbite that you would want to hear again for any reason. Perhaps you're amused. Perhaps you disagree so much that you want to hear it again. You think it's valuable. It says something about the subject that it's dealing with. Think it's especially clear. You just like the guest. Any reason is good. To play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, you just give us a call, 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850. You can also email us, but I encourage you to do that early because email takes longer than a phone call, oddly enough. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. We're coming to you live this Thursday, the 12th of April. Here's soundbite number one. It's presidential contender Rudolph Giuliani answering a question about his view on abortion.
I'm in the same position now that I was 12 years ago when I ran for mayor or as mayor, which is personally opposed to abortion, don't like it, hate it, would advise that woman, have an adoption rather than an abortion. I'll help you find the money for it. But it's your choice. It's an individual right. Generally, that's my view. Abortion's wrong. Abortion shouldn't happen. Personally, you should counsel people to that extent. It's a constitutional right. And therefore, if it's a constitutional right, ultimately, even if you do it on a state-by-state basis, you have to make sure that people are protected.
So you support taxpayer money or public funding for abortion in some cases?
If it would deprive someone of a constitutional right, yes.
That's the first soundbite, and it's soundbite number one, Rudolph Giuliani, his views on abortion. The only thing he didn't address there really was, well, he didn't address some of the other ancillary concerns about abortion, but he made it pretty clear he's personally opposed, but, and he would go so far as to uphold it as a constitutional right worthy of taxpayer support if that's necessary. So maybe you want to vote for this one because it upsets you to hear the front runner for Republican ticket in 2008, the guy who is actually polling better than anyone else of all the Republicans running, saying he's in favor of tax funding for abortion, and he thinks, while he's personally opposed, he's got no problem with Roe v. Wade. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Use those phone numbers or that email to vote for Issues, etc. Soundbite number one. Here's number two. Yesterday on the program, Dr. R. Scott Clark was our guest, and he commented on how Jesus not only was the mediator of the old covenant, he also is the mediator of the new covenant and always will be.
Over the years, I've had lots of people say to me flat out that when they die, one of the things they're looking forward to is, you know, saying hello to Jesus and then, you know, waving, good job on the cross, well done. Now show me the Father. And, you know, and I tell my students, and I tell my congregation, and anybody who will listen, I'm telling you, don't open that door. The Bible is very clear. That's not a door you want to go through because it's not good on the other side. The Son is the mediator. He's always been the mediator. You say, well, how do you know that, Clark? Well, I know it from the Bible, John 1:1. In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. John's primary point there is that Jesus is the discloser, the revealer, the mediator of the Father to us.
All right, that's R. Scott Clark, soundbite number two. If you would like to vote for it as we play Issues, Etc. soundbite of the week, call us 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850, or you can email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now, the best callers are going to get an Issues Etc. travel mug and an Issues Etc. pen. I think the T-shirts are all gone, unfortunately. And they're so precious. If there are any left, they're probably going to go into some sort of, safe, some sort of underground cavern to be held for after the apocalypse. Who knows?
No, I've been contacted by somebody at the Smithsonian.
Oh, really? They
yes,
want to have.
Yes,
they would like to hang the issue. I have Issues T-shirt right next to the Spirit of St. Louis.
Yes, exactly. How did you know that? That's amazing.
I don't know. You know, these things, great minds.
You know, I think when people, you know, two great St. Louisans, Lucky Lindy and Todd Wilkin.
Yes. Okay, so we're not giving away a T-shirt. Is that the way it works? Yes, no?
It depends how big our listeners are. We're all out of 2XL. So there's a possibility we could give out extra large, large, or medium.
Okay, so if you were an oversized listener, then you're really out of luck when it comes to the I Have Issues T-shirt.
Yeah, if you're like Matt Harrison of LCMS World Relief or bigger, forget it. You're not getting one. Maybe Matt's listening.
Yeah, he doesn't care. He's a big guy. He knows he could take you. Not a problem. That was soundbite number two. Here's soundbite number three. It comes from Wesley Smith. Now, we have Wesley Smith on the air all the time, and he talks about embryonic stem cell research and human cloning, and he's probably the best guest I think we have on those issues all round. And many people would listen to somebody like Wesley and assume that because he writes for National Review, because he comes on a program like this, that he's some sort of apologist for the Republican Party, or he's a big Bush supporter or a Republican hack. It's an easy way to dismiss somebody like Wesley Smith. Here's his response to that.
I guess you're getting at the fact that I once co-authored books with Ralph Nader. And Ralph's a very good friend of mine. Those issues were nothing compared to what I'm doing now. I mean, those were different issues.
Mm-hmm.
But I do not get engaged in partisan politics. I consider myself a Martin Luther King liberal. That is, I believe in the intrinsic equality of human life. Today, that is deemed conservative, but to me, it's Martin Luther King liberalism, which tells you what's happened to the left, in my view.
All right, so he is no Republican hack. He is, what would we say, a strongly pro-life liberal by his own admission. Look, it takes all kinds, and when it comes to these issues of life, especially here on Issues Etc., we got no problem with crossing party lines, or not that there may even be lines. We want allies from every sector when it comes to defending life from beginning to end. That was Wesley Smith at soundbite number 3. Is it your soundbite of the week? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now, here's the fourth soundbite. It's the last one, and right after this, you need to get ready to call those numbers. It comes from Pastor Bill Swerlow. We reviewed this sermon, an Easter sermon that he preached at Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in Hacienda Heights, California. And he's simply playing out in the course of this sermon what it means if Christ is not raised.
Never mind all the fringe benefits of being a Christian, how it brings you peace of mind. I have yet to experience peace of mind in 49 years of being a Christian. How it brings joy, joy, joy to your heart. Oh, yes. Along with sorrow and grief at the same time, or how it helps you through life's problems. My experience is it creates more problems than it solves in life. You can't have Jesus the teacher, Jesus the great moral example, Jesus the prophet, Jesus the nice guy who did nice things for people without Jesus hanging dead on a cross and rising bodily from the dead. If Jesus is not risen from the dead, then the Christian faith is not one of the noble religions in the world. It's a big fat lie. And it's not worth wasting your Sundays over, let alone this Sunday, let alone your life.
All right, there's soundbite number 4. It's from Pastor Bill Swerlow in his Easter sermon, What If Christ Is Not Raised? Is it your Issues Etc. soundbite of the week? We've got soundbite number 1, Rudolph Giuliani being forthright concerning his views regarding abortion. We've got Dr. R. Scott Clark saying that Jesus always was, is, and ever shall be our mediator. We've got soundbite number 3, Wesley Smith, freely admitting to be a pro-life liberal of the Martin Luther King stripe. And we've got Pastor Bill Swerlow laying it on the line. What if Christ isn't raised? Well, it makes all the difference in the world, and it means Christianity isn't worth anything if Christ is not raised. Those are the soundbites. Which is your Issues Etc. soundbite of the week? It's time to call and email issuesetc@kfuo.org or 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. We're playing Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week as we come to you live this Thursday, the 12th of April. Let's start with Roland in South City. Hi, Roland.
Well, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I kind of like Rudy, but that's not my vote. Because if he wants to pay for civil rights, there's a Browning A-bolt that I hope he buys me for my birthday this year.
You're talking about the Second Amendment issue.
That's all right. You'll treat that the same as the First and the Third and the Fifth and so on.
Sure.
But I like Swerlow because Swerlow, in a very short little snippet there, explained why church growth, contemporary church growth, will never work in a Lutheran church.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it's the bloody body of Christ hanging on the cross that nobody wants to see in a big box church. And if we keep trying to apply that to Lutheran churches, we're going to have the same success at bringing in bodies and then signing them off on an A-ticket straight to hell.
Wow, Roland, thank you very much. That should have been a soundbite of the week. Too bad it's Thursday, Roland. That should have been a soundbite of the week. So now we all know what Roland thinks. Thank you very much for the call. What about the rest of you? Which is your soundbite of the week? issuesetc@kfuo.org or 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I do like that term, big box church. We got to remember that, Roland, if you don't mind. And if it isn't already copyrighted, I shall feel free to use it on the air. Big box church. Karen calls from her car. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Todd. Thanks. I'm voting for Pastor Swirla because if you got that part right, the rest of them are kind of secondary importance.
Okay. Karen, thank you very much. Short and sweet. So for both Roland and Karen, it's soundbite number 4, which now has 2 votes. Pastor Bill Swirla on what are the real implications of Christ if he isn't raised? How relevant is Jesus if he isn't, your, as Roland put it, your bloody, the bloody body hanging on the cross for you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's work our way backwards and do 4-3-2-1. We'll start with soundbite number 4, Pastor Bill Swirla. If Christ is not raised, is Christianity any good?
Never mind all the fringe benefits of being a Christian, how it brings you peace of mind. I have yet to experience peace of mind in 49 years of being a Christian. How it brings joy, joy, joy to your heart. Oh, yes, along with sorrow and grief at the same time. Or how it helps you through life's problems. My experience is it creates more problems than it solves in life. You can't have Jesus the teacher, Jesus the great moral example, Jesus the prophet, Jesus the nice guy who did nice things for people without Jesus hanging dead on a cross and rising bodily from the dead. If Jesus is not risen from the dead, then the Christian faith is not one of the noble religions in the world. It's a big fat lie. And it's not worth wasting your Sundays over, let alone this Sunday, let alone your life.
That was soundbite number 4. Is it Your Issues, Etc.? Soundbite of the week, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. So far it has 2 votes. What about you? Here's soundbite number 3. It is Wesley Smith on responding to people who say if he's pro-life, he just must be a Republican hack.
I guess you're getting at the fact that I once co-authored books with Ralph Nader. And Ralph's a very good friend of mine. Those issues were nothing compared to what I'm doing now. I mean, those were different issues.
Mm-hmm.
But I do not get engaged in partisan politics. I consider myself a Martin Luther King liberal. That is, I believe in the intrinsic equality of human life. Today, that is deemed conservative, but to me, it's Martin Luther King liberalism, which tells you what's happened to the left, in my view.
There's soundbite number 3 from Wesley Smith. Is it your soundbite of the week? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We don't have any email yet. issuesetc@kfuo.org. Here's soundbite number 2, Dr. R. Scott Clark. What's the point of going to heaven? Is it to finally, once and for all, see the Father? Here's his response.
Over the years, I've had lots of people say to me flat out that when they die, one of the things they're looking forward to is, you know, saying hello to Jesus and then, you know, waving, good job on the cross, well done, now show me the Father. and I tell my students, and I tell my congregation, anybody who will listen, I'm telling you, don't open that door. The Bible is very clear. That's not a door you want to go through because it's not good on the other side. The Son is the mediator. He's always been the mediator. You say, well, how do you know that, Clark? Well, I know it from the Bible. John 1:1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. John's primary point there is that Jesus is the discloser, the revealer, the mediator of the Father to us.
All right, that's soundbite number 2, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And here's soundbite number 1. We're working our way backwards. Rudolph Giuliani being quite honest about his views on abortion, both then and now.
I'm in the same position now that I was 12 years ago when I ran for mayor or as mayor, which is personally opposed to abortion, don't like it, hate it, would advise that woman have an adoption rather than an abortion. I'll help you find the money for it. But it's your choice. It's an individual right. Generally, that's my view. Abortion's wrong. Abortion shouldn't happen. Personally, you should counsel people to that extent. It's a constitutional right. And therefore, if it's a constitutional right, ultimately, even if you do it on a state-by-state basis, you have to make sure that people are protected.
So you support taxpayer money or public funding for abortion in some cases?
If it would deprive someone of a constitutional right, yes.
All right, the best callers, we play an Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. You get an Issues Etc. travel mug and an Issues Etc. pen. And if Jeff is feeling generous and you happen to be smaller than a double XL, maybe even an Issues Etc. I have issues t-shirt. We'll give one of those away, perhaps, if Jeff is feeling generous. Let's go first to Jonathan in Howard, South Dakota. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Todd. As a preacher myself, I preached on Easter Sunday, and after hearing Swirla, I wish I could be so much more winsome.
Don't we all?
But I just love the way he hits us with the law here. You know, really deep down, this is what we all want from the faith, and he really hits us with it, and then the rest of the sermon brings the gospel straight to home.
So I take it you're voting for soundbite number four, Swirla's Easter sermon, What If Christ Isn't Raised?
That's correct.
All right, Jonathan, thank you, and thanks for listening up in South Dakota. Alan calls from Trenton, Illinois. Alan, welcome.
Yes, I'm voting for Pastor Swirla again, too. He framed Christian peace, joy, Jesus is a moral teacher and a nice guy just right, I think. Without the cross and the resurrection, our faith is meaningless and dead.
All right, thank you very much. Which makes you wonder, why is it that the cross and the resurrection are left out so many Sundays when it really is the linchpin of everything that Christians believe? Why is it we spend so little time on Sunday mornings from the pulpits dealing with the thing that makes all the difference in the world, and the thing upon which everything in the Christian faith hangs? Got to scratch your head. Thank you very much, Alan. Let's see. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And Jen from Las Vegas has emailed us at issuesetc@kfuo.org with this. I vote for Dr. Clark's soundbite number two. Dr. Clark is so to the point on the fact that Jesus is the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament. John 1:1 is one of my favorite verses. Love his clip about waving to Jesus in heaven. Good chuckle, says Jen in Vegas. Yes. Hey, Jesus, how you doing? Hey, thanks for the whole cross bit. Now, where's the Father? Not exactly what heaven is going to be like. Let's see what Ellen has to say. She is waiting in Chesterfield. Hi, Ellen.
Oh, hello there, Pastor. You know, that Rudy Giuliani, I'm getting so tired of people saying, I hate abortion, but it's the woman's right. Well, where do we draw the line with rights? When will the day come when we can give grandma a pill and get rid of her because she's getting senile? Or, I mean, the Jehovah's Witness people, they have a right to deny that their child a blood transfusion, and murder is murder, and you just get so sick of hearing this sort of thing all the time.
So are you going to vote for number one? All right.
Okay, goodbye.
And that was Ellen just illustrates something very good about Soundbite of the Week. She finds what Giuliani has to say morally repugnant, but that's why she chose it as a Soundbite of the Week. I guess you could say it says everything she needs to hear about Giuliani's position on abortion. All right, we've only got a few minutes left for you to cast your vote in Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, but plenty of time to call 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727 or to email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org. So far, we've got one vote for Giuliani. I should correct that. One vote for the Giuliani soundbite, number one. One vote for soundbite number two, R. Scott Clark, on Jesus as mediator. No votes for soundbite number three, Wesley Smith, our proudly professed pro-life liberal, and four votes for Pastor Bill Swirla on What If Christ Really Isn't Raised. So at this point, unless something turns around, Swirla's going to carry it away. Has he won Soundbite of the Week before? I think he has won at least once, one of his soundbites. We choose him a lot because, of course, as someone already pointed out, we've got this winsome eloquence with a guy like Bill Swirla that's hard to pass up.
You know, we had that idea about the lyrics to Peter Cottontail. We did that show a couple years ago, Santa Claus Theology. Santa Claus, you better watch out. You better not cry. Santa Claus is coming to town.
Yeah.
We turned it a great Sunday night show, two-hour show on that. So we did want to do some Easter Bunny theology. Haven't heard back from him yet on that.
You haven't?
No. We've got Easter is a season, as you keep reminding us.
That's true. He's got all of Easter to contemplate this. You know what's hard about doing a Bill Swirla soundbite? As I said to Jeff earlier today, it's all gold. What do you do? What do you cut? I have to be very careful when I produce these soundbites because I don't want them to be too long. So I carefully cut out stuff that is sometimes extraneous to get to the point without changing the content, of course. And you can't cut anything with Bill. That's a sign of a very good preacher. When you can't cut out anything that's extraneous, he says what needs to be said. All right, so he's leading the totals. Tomorrow on the program, by the way, we're going to be talking about the resurrection of Christ with Dr. Norman Nagel and Dr. Arthur Jest. Very interesting conversation there. Sunday night, you've seen it in the bookstores. I had to read it this morning. It was not a pleasant experience, but I did it because we're going to be reviewing the book, The Secret, and its attending DVD with Gretchen Passantino. For some reason, people are buying this thing all over the place. And we'll review the book that is apparently changing people's lives and, according to the authors of the book, works every time it's tried with Gretchen Passantino of Answers in Action. Monday on the program, we'll begin a three-part series on Roman Catholicism with Dr. Martin Noland. Dr. Martin Noland is my security blanket. Whenever I feel insecure, whenever I feel as though Lutheranism is doomed, whenever I feel as though it's gone the way of the dinosaur, Marty Noland comes into Studio A. And I'm reminded that there are still Lutherans in this world. And I feel better. And I go home comforted knowing that it's not extinct yet. All right. I don't know how big Roland is, but he definitely had the best call this time. If only for the big box church term that he lent to me. I'm going to guess that he's smaller than a 2XL. All right. So, Roland, you're going to get an Issues Etc. I Have Issues t-shirt for being the best caller. And let's give the... Did I get the Jen in there, too? Jen. Thank you. Let's give an Issues Etc. travel mug and pen this time to Jonathan in South Dakota. Thank you very much for playing Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.